Hi everyone, just wanted to give you a quick heads up on something. The live recording about Mildred Pierce that I mentioned in the last podcast has taken place. However, plans have changed slightly, and you'll now be able to hear that conversation next week. So if anyone was considering watching the film, you've now got an extra 7 days to do so before the episode is released. Anyway, without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Welcome back, everyone, to the Movie Palace. As ever, I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and thank you for joining me for this, which is another episode, really, devoted to the massive online classic film community. So, a few weeks ago, you will have heard me speak to Jessica Pickens from the Comet Over Hollywood blog, and we had a great time chatting about, you know, her interest in musicals and all sorts. And I wanted to do another episode in the same kind of vein, really. So I'm absolutely delighted today to welcome onto the podcast the writer of the Out of the Past blog, and her name is Raquel Stetcher. Hi, Raquel.
Hi.
It's really nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we're going to spend a bit of time. We're going to talk about your blog, of course, and, you know, discuss what you've got going on there. Really looking forward to discussing classic film books with you, because I think that should be a lot of fun. So we're going to get some recommendations from you, aren't we, about what people should check out and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But first, what I think would be a good idea is to find out about a few of your classic film opinions, Raquel. So, are you ready for me to give you a little bit of a quiz?
Okay, sounds good.
Just a few questions. First one, what's an old movie that doesn't get enough love?
Okay, so this movie that I picked is Lonesome from 1928. A lot of people haven't heard of it. It's a part talkie. It started out as a silent movie. And because it came out during the transition into talking pictures, they spliced in a few talking scenes. It's directed by Paul Feyhose, or Pal Feyhose, depending on how he's listed. And it stars Barbara Kent and Glenn Tryon. And it's a very sweet movie. It has a really nice social message about, you know, if you're living your life and you're not paying attention to the world around you, to kind of slow down and take things in. And it's funny because, like, the characters in the story are very, they live very hectic lives, so it's still very relevant today. And it's a great film for people who are hesitant about silent movies, because it comes at the very end of the silent film era, so it's faster paced, it's more approachable. But some people don't like it because of the talking scenes. It kind of takes you out a little of it. But it's such a sweet movie. It's just well done. I think it's a great gateway movie if you want to explore silent movies, and I don't think it's talked about enough. And so that's my pick.
Great stuff. I mean, I'll confess, I haven't seen the film. I haven't heard of it, but it sounds really good. I wonder how easily it is for people to see then. I wonder if it's had like a DVD release and so on.
It does have a Criterion DVD release, but I don't think it's ever been upgraded to Blu-ray. And I don't know if it's still in print with Criterion. They might still have it available, but it is. I've seen it on the big screen before with live music. And so it's somewhat available.
And the second question then is kind of the flip side to that, slightly more controversial one perhaps. So what's a highly regarded old movie that gets a bit too much love?
Okay, so I'm going to lose some fans here. So I would say Gone with the Wind, which is kind of a controversial pick. And the reason why is, I mean, there are kind of two camps right now. Some people say that we've kind of outgrown it. It's a movie that some people say it should be banned, or it should be not shown anymore because of its content and how it kind of glorifies like Confederacy and that kind of culture and like this past that we're trying to move away from. And then other people say it's, you know, a brilliant example of filmmaking and it has a great cast. It's so important in film history, but it's made such a huge cultural impact. So I get both sides, but I think it's a good movie, but I think it's maybe puffed up a bit too much. I think it fits in film history as an important film, but I think it's given too much love. I personally don't even care for it. I don't even like Scarlett O'Hara. I think, I mean, people try to convince me, oh, this is why you should love Scarlett O'Hara. I'm like, I just don't like her. I don't sympathize with her. I don't care about her, you know, story trajectory. I couldn't connect with it as much as other people who are diehards.
Yeah, I mean, I've only seen the film once. It was about 15 years ago. So all the kind of controversies like recently that you've mentioned weren't quite as widely discussed at the time, I don't think. So it's one that I really need to go back and figure out where I am on Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Because I've got friends who, you know, swear by it, who think it's one of their favourite films. And I don't remember enjoying it to that degree.
I mean, it's a long movie and I was quite bored by it the couple times I've seen it, but I've also spoken to people who absolutely adore it, and I totally see where they're coming from. I just, you know, and also, I mean, you can say that about any of the movies that people say are the greatest films of all time. They're, I mean, that's a difficult label to put on a movie, because all movies have, you know, have their audiences, and it's not everybody.
Yeah, and also, you know, when you hear that something is the greatest, before you see it, you've got kind of this idea in your head, don't you? And sometimes the films can't quite, like, measure up to it, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it sets you up for a letdown if it's not going to be the movie for you.
That's it, yeah. Okay, then, let's think about some of the people who were working in, like, old Hollywood then. So, who's your favourite star from the golden age of Hollywood, that, you know, male or female?
Okay, so anyone who knows me knows I absolutely love Robert Mitchum. He is my absolute favorite actor. I will watch him in anything. He had a very long and wonderful career doing absolutely any type of movie you can imagine. Like, he was good in Westerns. He was good in film noir. He was even good at, like, romantic, like the one romantic comedy he did, Holiday Affair. He was really good at anything. And even when he was in a bad movie, his scenes were the best part of that movie. Like, he just had great screen presence. And he had this kind of cool demeanor, that line from Out of the Past, he says, "Baby, I don't care." That's kind of like his mantra. Like, he seems like he doesn't care, but he was very devoted to his craft. And I remember learning about, like, Ryan's Daughter and Friends of Eddie Coyle, and he, like, the filmmakers had to have him do, like, an accent. He would study the accent, or he had a repertoire of accents ready to go for the part. And he was a good writer. He was a good singer. He wrote poetry. He wrote comedy skits. He wrote songs. I mean, he was multi-talented, and I just love watching his movies.
And he was around for a long time as well, wasn't he? He had great, like, longevity.
Yeah, he worked from the early 40s up until he passed away in 97. Pretty much worked his whole life.
Yeah, I'm a big Mitchum fan as well, I have to say. All right, so what about these people behind the camera then, the directors? So who was the best filmmaker in classic Hollywood?
That's hard because there's so many good ones. But, like, my personal favorite is Fritz Lang. I've seen almost every single one of his movies, except for, like, I think there's two, Silence That Are Lost, and then his last film that he made when he came back to Europe, the Indian Tomb and The Tiger of Eshnapur, like, those films I haven't seen yet, but everything else I've seen. And he was a very controversial director because he wasn't very nice to his, with actors, and his past was a little shady, but he could work on anything. Like, he made masterpieces in the silent film era, like Metropolis, or, like, even something that's not well known, like Woman on the Moon is just, like, an amazing movie. And then when he came to Hollywood, I mean, he could do a Western, a film noir, he could do anything. I mean, not all of his movies are great, but a lot of them are very, very good. And some of them are my absolute favorite movies. So he's one that I decided to dive into his filmography and just watch as much as I could. And I kept going because everything was so enjoyable.
And it's so great, isn't it? Like, because you know, my answer to this question would be like Billy Wilder. But what kind of links them is there that these kind of European migrants, aren't they, who they come to America and then they end up kind of making some of the best American movies, really?
Oh, it's yeah,
It's just a fascinating idea.
That was one of the best things that happened to Hollywood, was all these directors coming from Europe, escaping, you know, World War II, and coming here and making amazing movies.
So I wonder then, I wonder if a Fritz Lang film is going to be your answer to the next question. Let's find out. So the question is, of course, what's your favourite classic film and why? So this can be for any reason, you know, like a personal reason, or you think it's the greatest, or whatever.
So it's actually not a Fritz Lang movie, although there's a lot of Fritz Lang movies that are really high on my list. This one's actually quite, it's a very sweet film. It's not like the greatest cinema ever. It's called Bachelor Mother from 1939, which is the greatest year in, you know, filmmaking from that era. It's just a sweet story of, it stars Ginger Rogers and David Niven. It's a sweet story about this shop girl kind of at the end of the Great Depression, and she is about to lose her job, and she finds a orphan baby, and everyone thinks that the baby is hers, and she gets kind of stuck with it, and she falls and she starts to like care for the baby, and also she starts to fall in love with the man who manages the department store she works in. And it's this beautiful comedy. It's a great example of how enjoyable classic movies can be. This is a film I can watch over and over and over again, and it's just, it fills my heart with joy every time I watch it. So for like emotional reasons, it's my favorite movie. It's not it's not going to be on any top 100 list, you know, but for me personally, the connection I have to it is just very sweet. And it's funny, one of the things I do is I've purchased a lot of copies of Bachelor Mother and given them to friends. That's one of my things, is just I always have a stack of 5 or 6 extra copies on hand. And if I find out a friend doesn't have a copy, I'll just send it to them. So it's like kind of my goodwill thing.
I mean, I'll confess I haven't seen the film, so I'll definitely
send it to you then. I'll send you one of my copies.
Awesome. I mean, it sounds right up my street, you know, because I really like Ginger Rogers. I love David Niven, so I'm sure I'll like it. It's just, for whatever reason, it's one that I don't think I've ever seen it on the television listings over here, you know, or anything like that. So
it's a great New Year's movie. Like, there's not a lot of movies about New Year's. But that one has a great New Year's scene, and Ginger Rogers dances in it. So if you need that, a little bit of that, that's in there.
That's it. Sold. All right. Great stuff. Cheers, Raquel. So let's talk a bit about your kind of general interest in films then. So we got kind of a sense of it there. But like, when did it start? I mean, were you always really into movies as a kid? And like, was it always the older stuff that like most appealed to you? What would you say?
So my backstory of how I came to classic movies is very different from other people. I've talked to people who say they, you know, were introduced to old movies by their grandparents or their parents or some other family member, or they watched them growing up in some other way. And I did not have that. I was a child of, you know, TV. So growing up, I watched some movies. For a while, I was really into horror. And then I grew up and realized, wow, those things look like they hurt a lot. So could not watch horror anymore. And then when I was a teenager, I read Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got Your Gun, and I was completely transformed. I didn't realize that a story could transport you and can make you feel things and could really change your viewpoint on the world. So I got really into literature. And when I was a teenager in the 90s, oh, there's so many period pieces that came out. All the big classic, like the classic novels from like the 19th century, were being adapted into movies. So I was reading these novels, like these, you know, Henry James and Thomas Hardy and Louisa May Alcott, and I was going to go see the movies in the theaters. So I loved period pieces, but I was very adamant. I was interested in history, but it had to be a new movie about the past. Could not be an old movie. I just did not want to watch old movies. And it wasn't until college where I took a film course. And I was like, I really like movies, I'll try this. And we watched the film Out of the Past. And it completely destroyed any misconception I had of movies. Because I thought they were, you know, I thought they were simplistic, you know, backwards. I thought they were boring, you know, I thought I had so many misconceptions about it. When I watch this movie is, it's dark, it's a little twisted, it's complicated, it's a little sexy, it's just, and I was like, who are these people? Like, who is Robert Mitchum? Who is Kirk Douglas? Like, who's Jane Greer? I need to, like, watch more movies from these people. And that movie left me so confused, too. Like, I gotta watch this movie again. So that got me hooked. That movie got me hooked onto old movies. So I started watching Turner Classic Movies. I started devouring as many movies as I possibly could, and I found that I just really liked classic movies.
So, I mean, obviously one of the great film noirs out of the past. Was it noirs then that really captured your imagination, or were you kind of more just kind of sampling all these different genres that Hollywood was, I don't know, did you kind of go around everything, or were you...
Oh, yeah, everything. Everything. Like, in that course I did, I had to do a analysis on Citizen Kane, and that was really good. And then I wrote a paper on Singing in the Rain, and we were watching just a variety of movies. And when I started watching Turner Classic Movies, or just, like, it was whatever was on. So it was like, oh, I'm watching more Hitchcock. I'm watching, like, musicals and comedies and dramas. Like, it was just a little bit of everything. There were maybe, like, I didn't watch as many, like, Westerns or sci-fi movies as possible, but I was really dipping into lots of things. And then, like, I discovered Pre-Code. I was like, what is this wonderful era, last era of movies? Yeah. So I dived into that. So, it was a little bit of everything.
All right, I guess then let's come on to talk about your blog then. So, Out of the Past blog, as we've said, so presumably named after the film.
Yeah.
How would you describe your blog to somebody, like, in a nutshell? What is it exactly that you do over there?
Well, just to give a short background, the reason I started the blog was because I had to talk about classic movies. Like, I could not contain it, and I ended up bugging my friend Frank at work, who was the only person in real life who would listen to me about classic movies. And it got to the point where I was like, I just had to start writing this down and having some sort of outlet for all these things I want to say about movies. So when I started it, it was just for fun. It was just like, I didn't even want to review movies. I just wanted to write, like, I kind of wanted to fangirl over classic movies, just write some fun, fluffy pieces. And then I got more serious about it because I really got interested in deep research, reading about the filmmaking process and especially the people involved in the movies. Like, I wanted to learn what motivated them, what their backgrounds were, how they came to this movie, how it affected their careers. So I got more serious about it. And now I review, but I don't really review. I mostly just do, like, background articles on different movies. I like to review books because that's a good way for me to do research and learn more. Yeah, I basically do a huge variety of articles, but mostly I focus on individual movies and then book reviews.
Yeah, and we're going to come on to talk about the book reviews because there's loads on your site. Yeah. But there's also like the interviews section. So I was wondering about some of, like, the interviews you've done over the years. So it looks like, you know, there's, like, red carpet interviews and stuff on there. So is there anything you're particularly kind of proud of on the interview kind of side of things?
Yeah, the red carpet, I have to say, as an introvert, that was huge for me. Because that is terrifying. So I go to the TCM Classic Film Festival every year. Luckily, I've been 6 times. And I go, I apply for press credentials, and I've been very lucky to have gotten them the 6 times that I've gone. And the last 3 years, I've applied for the red carpet. And this was just, I'm given just like this blogger spot, you know, down the line. So I'm lucky whoever comes over. But I've been able to get some really great short interviews with people. I've interviewed Gina Lola Brigida, Daryl Hickman, Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett's funny because the first post I ever wrote on my blog was about Dick Cavett. And 10 years later, I got to talk to him in person, which was nuts. This year, I got a chance to interview Leonard Whiting and Olivia Hussey, who were Romeo and Juliet in the 1968 adaptation. And that film, I didn't watch a lot of classic movies growing up, but, like, that one in my teenage years was incredibly important to me. So to be able to talk to them in person was wonderful. But yeah, this I research every guest before I go. I make sure I have a list of questions. I'm very prepared, and a lot of them have come out pretty decent. So I'm very proud of those.
And yeah, let's move on to the books then, because I mean, I know you've got something going on at the minute, which is really fun, which is called the Summer Reading Challenge, isn't it?
So, yeah.
I mean, we're speaking here in August. The podcast will probably go out in September, so it'll probably be coming towards its end at that point, I guess. And it's too late for people to sign up for this year's. But what can you tell us about it anyway? Because it is fascinating. I mean, is this going to be continuing on into the future for years to come?
Yes, I started it in 2013, and it's been pretty successful. So I've been keeping going, and I plan to do it again next year. So anyone who wants to sign up for next year, I usually announce it in May or June. And so I was inspired by blogathons, which in the classic movie blogging community, a lot of people do blogathons where they have like one topic and then everyone writes about that particular topic. And I thought, I was having a conversation with a friend who said, you know, I love classic film books, but they just collect dust because I never have time to read them. So I was like, what if I challenged people? Like, take the summer. And I have people from, you know, the Southern Hemisphere too, so this is their winter reading challenge, and read 6 books. And if it's a little over 3 months, so it's like 2 books a month. But if you can't read all 6, you can read as many as you possibly can. And pick out 6 classic film books. They could be a novel that was adapted into a classic movie, a biography, a coffee table book, could be a book about a particular genre of film, like a book about film noir, or pre-codes, westerns, whatever you want, as long as it fits sort of into classic movies, and read and review them. And you can review them on your blog, or you can go onto Goodreads and post your review. And I've opened it up recently to Instagram. So you just take a photo of your book and just write a brief review about the book. And then if you review all 6 books, you're entered to win a giveaway, which is one selection from the Warner Archive Collection. You can pick a movie that you'd like, and I'll send it to you. And I open it internationally. So, and a lot of people get really interested. Some people sign up and don't read anything, but a lot of people sign up and really go for it. And it's so encouraging to see. And it's a good excuse, because a lot of us have film books. It's a good excuse to get to them.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think anything that gets people reading is a good thing, you know, especially about such a great subject as like classic film. So I'll definitely make sure I sign up to do it next year, because I was a bit slow off the mark this year. Yeah, but definitely next time. Yeah, so let's talk about the book reviews on your site then, because I mean, it's a really great part of your site. I'm not sure how many you've got there exactly, but there's a lot of reviews there people can check out, aren't there?
I think I have over 60 now.
So, I mean, did you start reading about old movies around the same time you started watching them, or did that come a bit later? Can you remember?
Right away. I even remember I read a Cary Grant biography before I even started my blog, and I reviewed it on my old personal blog because I wanted to review it. I wanted people to know about it. So yeah, it's been a thing that I've done from the very beginning, and I work with publishers and I get review copies and I, you know, do a little promotion and I review, but I also have books that I collect, you know, whenever I go to California, go to Larry Edmonds Bookshop and get some rare books there, or get some books signed. Those are great. But yeah, no, it's always been part of that, the journey of the blogging.
And like in one of the reviews I was reading, I think you said something like you're reading these books less for entertainment and it's more to like study and learn about the movies and like the people behind the movies and stuff. And it feels to me like that really shines through in your reviews, you know, because you take quite like an analytical approach, don't you?
Thank you. Yes, I do. And I work in publishing, so I also like critique the book as a product of book publishing. But yeah, no, this is very much like I want to learn as much as possible. I don't have the film history background that a lot of people have. So this is my self-education, basically. And I want to learn as much as possible. I want to be exposed to new ideas. And I don't even want to read just about, you know, the classic film actors that everyone knows. I want to read about people behind the scenes that maybe people don't know about. I want to expand my horizons as much as possible through these books.
Great stuff. Well, I think that leads us nicely on to what we're going to do next then, I suppose, which is, Raquel, you're going to give me and our listeners, of course, some classic film book recommendations, aren't you? And like, I've got a few as well. I can chip in a couple of my favourites. So this should be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah.
And like, I have no idea what you've chosen. You've got no idea what I've picked either. So we'll see how we go. I mean, how hard was it for you to make these choices? Did you make a list, or, you know, did it come quite quickly? Oh, what kind of things did you kind of consider?
Sorry, it came super quickly. I have all my classic film books in their own section. In fact, on my YouTube channel, I have a video tour of my whole collection of books. And I was just like, okay, I know exactly the top three that I wanted to grab. And then, like, I picked a couple others. But yeah, I pretty much knew right away which ones.
Oh, good stuff. All right, so let's get into it, I suppose. So you first. So what's the first title you've chosen for us?
Okay. The first one is the best one, the best one I've ever read, which is Anne Dvorak, Hollywood's Forgotten Rebel by Christina Rice. Christina Rice is a lovely woman. I've met her. She runs AnneDvorak.com. She's a librarian in the Los Angeles library, one of the Los Angeles libraries, but she's very good at research. Anne Dvorak was a very difficult subject because there wasn't too much information about her. Not a lot of people know about her. But Christina Rice did such incredible research. She dug so much to find any little bit of information she could. And this was a passion project for her. And it's the only biography on a classic movie star that I've read where you can tell that the author is so incredibly passionate about the subject and about researching and writing this book. It comes through. And even if I've even recommended this to people who don't even like old movies, I'm like, just read it for it being a biography by someone who's passionate about the subject, because in that case, it's brilliant on its own. And she does such a good job. And you even see a little bit of the struggle of her trying to get, especially when Anne Dvorak retired and lived kind of in obscurity in Hollywood, trying to get those little bits of information. And she did such a good job. It's very well written. It's just a really good book. I recommend it.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because like, I think anyone who reads a lot of biographies, it can be that biographies can be quite dry, can't it? And so this one sounds like the complete opposite of that. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, do you want to give us your next one, Raquel, and then I'll chip in with one of mine.
Okay, that sounds good. So my next one is, no surprise, it's about Robert Mitchum. and it's called Baby, I Don't Care. And it's by Lee Server. I have actually never reviewed this one. I've read it a few times, but I've always been intimidated to review it. But I tell people about it all the time. It's such a good... But it's such a good biography. Lee Server did such a great job really basically capturing the life of Robert Mitchum, but his career too. Like I refer to this book anytime I review a movie that has Robert Mitchum in it. I go back to this book and I always find some kind of behind the scenes nugget that I forgot about or I can use in my review. So it's an incredible resource. It's very well written. I've read some of his other books and he's just a really great writer. Yeah, and there's really has never ever been another Robert Mitchum biography, because this one is so good that I don't think anything else will compare to it.
Ah, that's interesting. So there hasn't been as much written about Mitchum as you'd imagine, then, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, I guess people who love classic movies know about him, but yeah, he never wrote a memoir. There's a collection of interviews, which are super interesting because he was notoriously bad interview. But there's no other biography that I know of. I mean, who knows? There might be one in the works, but that's really the only one that exists, and it's really good.
All right. Well, the first book I've chosen is Hitchcock Truffaut, which, of course, is the famous book-long discussion between, you know, Alfred Hitchcock and Francois Truffaut. I think it was first published in the 1960s, but then there's an updated version later on with an extra chapter. And, it goes through more or less Hitchcock's entire career. I think the last film they talk about is Torn Curtain. But like I said, there's a new version where Hitchcock is not interviewed about it, but it talks about his later films too. So, I mean, it's obviously arguably quite an important book, because I think it's easy for people not to realise this now. But there was a time when Hitchcock, I think the critics were a little bit more sceptical about him. They thought he was a great entertainer, but they didn't necessarily think he was a great artist. And that kind of turned around because of people like Truffaut, I think. But even if this wasn't an important book, though, it's a great read. It's very accessible. Lots of great pictures. Truffaut is a very good interviewer, too. He manages to get a lot of insight out of Hitchcock, I think. And obviously people might be interested in Truffaut as a director in his own right, of course. But yeah, Hitchcock Truffaut. Is that one you're a fan of, Raquel?
That was on my list, too.
Oh, sorry.
No. I'm great. I'm glad that you brought it up because, you know, I agree with you. Like, there wasn't an appreciation for Hitchcock, and Truffaut really changed that. And I love the interviews in there. I mean, I watched a documentary about it, and the audio is kind of hard to listen because of all the translation that's going on. But it's much more approachable in the book form. And I love hearing them talk because Truffaut really just has had this appreciation for Hitchcock's work, but they also kind of discuss, you know, things that, you know, have gone wrong in certain films, or like what worked and what didn't work. And you can tell these are really two brilliant filmmakers really hashing it out about technique. And I learned so much about filmmaking. There's a great line from Hitchcock where he says, "Filmic time is not the same as real time," or something like that. And I keep that in mind because people are like, oh, well, that wouldn't have taken that long, or that would have taken much longer in that movie. But filmed, like, time as it exists in a movie is not the same as in real life. And I just, stuff like that, I really enjoyed. And the book is wonderful. I have the updated edition.
Yeah, and it's just great. I mean, Hitchcock's surprisingly quite candid at points as well. So, yeah, definitely people should find their own copy of it, I suppose. All right, so you've got three left of you, Raquel. So what's the next one?
So the next one is one I read recently, and I just hosted a giveaway for it. Unfortunately, just ended. But so it's called Must-See Sci-Fi, 50 Movies That Are Out of This World by Sloan DeForest. It's got a foreword by Roger Corman. I ended up getting this in my goodie bag at the TCM Film Festival, and I don't care for sci-fi. And I was like, well, okay, I don't know what to do with this book. Maybe I'll give it away or whatever. But my husband started reading it, and he said, Raquel, this is really good. So I started reading it, and I was completely engrossed. And she, the author, Sloan DeForest, did such a good job describing the films, but really giving you a social context of the time that they came from, and how they fit in film history, but also how they influenced science fiction to come. And it really opened my mind to science fiction. And now I made a list of movies that I want to see that I have been avoiding for years. And she convinced me. So that's a sign of a good book. If someone can really sell something to you and do it convincingly, and she's such a good writer too, that it was just very enjoyable to read. So that's one I recommend.
No, I agree totally. It's great when you find something that's like a springboard onto like other stuff that you watch or read, isn't it? It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
The next one I've got, I think you reviewed this one. So let's find out. The book's called, I think it's only a year or two old. It's called Mary Astor's Purple Diary, and it's by a writer called Edward Sorrell. And what it is, it's a retelling of like a scandalous custody trial involving Mary Astor, who people will know, of course, from things like The Maltese Falcon, and she pops up in Meet Me in St. Louis as well, doesn't she? And the book, I mean, it goes through the trial, but it's about her whole life story too, really. And I just found it really entertaining, really breezy. It's a very witty book, and part of the reason I found it such a treat is because the author kind of puts his own illustrations in throughout, which just kind of adds to the sense of liveliness. So I think if anyone's interested in like Hollywood scandals, you'd probably get a bit of a kick out of this. But even if it doesn't sound like your cup of tea, I'd still urge you to give it a try. But how about you, Raquel? What did you think of the book?
I really enjoyed that one. And I like the fact that it's also somewhat of a memoir of the author.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how he makes Mary Astor a kind of a ghost that visits him throughout the book. And the illustrations are amazing. He actually did an event in the Boston area, and I got to meet him, and I have my copy signed, which was really exciting. They did an exhibit of a lot of his artwork, and he did a lot of illustrations with references to classic movies. So he had a real love for classic movies. But that one is such a, that book, like, there's nothing else like it. It's just so unique, and that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, because you said about his personal story, and doesn't it start off with him finding like the newspaper articles about the trial under like linoleum or something?
Yes, he's like remodeling his apartment or something. Yeah. That's it's really cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really is. So you've got two left of you, Raquel. What's next on your list?
Okay, so my next one is a what I like to call part of my 1,000-page biography collection. I've actually read several biographies that are 1,000 pages long. And to me, as someone who's very bookish, this is, but also someone who has, I'm not like the fastest reader. 1,000 pages is a, you know, a good accomplishment, especially when it's nonfiction. So this is by Victoria Wilson. It's called A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True. And it doesn't cover all of Barbara Stanwyck's life. This is just the first volume. It just covers from 1907 to 1940, 15 years worth of research. Victoria Wilson, she, I believe, is an editor in publishing, I think maybe for Knopf. And she really did her research. I know that Barbara Stanwyck's son contributed to her research, and it shows. It's a long book, but it's very well written. There's a lot of information. It can be a little overwhelming, but if you're interested in Barbara Stanwyck, this is one to read. And also, some biographies just kind of gloss over, like especially the shorter ones, gloss over life. This just completely, you are immersed in Stanwyck's life. So if you're a Stanwyck fan, this is the book to read. And hopefully two will come out soon.
Awesome. I am a Stanwyck fan, you know. I mean, Double Indemnity obviously is the one I think of, but she had some great roles in like Westerns. She had a fantastic career. She like, you know, when some stars struggled a bit more as they were aging, Stanwyck kind of adapted quite well, I think, you know.
True.
So fascinating stuff. I'm going to choose a book then, which is about a specific film. I'm not sure. I don't think I saw a review for this one on your site, but I might be wrong. So the book is called The Searchers, The Making of an American Legend by a guy called Glenn Frankel. I think it came out about 2 or 3 years ago. So it's a great look at John Ford's classic film, which I think is one of the most fascinating westerns in a lot of ways. But the book goes into the making of the film, of course, and it talks about Ford and John Wayne and all that kind of stuff you'd expect. But what makes it so brilliant, though, I think, is it sort of opened my eyes to some real life history too. So it goes into this story about a girl in East Texas in the 1830s called Cynthia Ann Parker, who was kidnapped by Comanches. And I think what happened was she was raised by the tribe. Eventually, like 20 years later, she was returned to her family by the US cavalry. But her family then were strangers to her, really. And what the book goes into is like how her real experience kind of became this legend, this kind of mythic tale. It then becomes the basis for the novel, The Searchers, by Alan LeMay, which Ford then adapts for the screen. So I think if anyone likes the film or is interested in the film, they'll dig this book. But if you just kind of have an interest in Westerns generally, it's a really good one. I'm not sure, Raquel. I don't, like I said, I don't think I saw a review of that one on yours, but I could be wrong.
No, I haven't read that one. I've only read a few books about particular movies, and I have to say I kind of want to read more. I think it's really interesting when you could do a deep dive
Yeah.
into an interesting movie, especially when it has a really interesting backstory or it's based on a true life story. I have on my list of books to read a book about Giant and everything, and that had a really interesting history. So I do want to read more books like that.
Yeah, well, this one, it's very comprehensive. I'm not sure how accessible people will find it. Once I got into it, I thought it was fascinating stuff. Anyway, let's come on to the last one on your list then. So, what's the final choice on yours, Raquel?
Okay, so one thing I don't delve into very much because I've been burned in the past is movie star memoirs and autobiographies. I mean, there are some absolute terrible ones out there. I can tell you right now, don't read Cagney by Cagney because it's just like, I mean, James Cagney was fascinating, but read a biography on him. Don't read his memoir because it's very biased. It skips a lot of stuff. It's just very weird. But this one I actually really enjoyed. It's Kirk and Anne, Letters of Love, Laughter, and a Lifetime in Hollywood. And it's by Kirk Douglas and his wife Anne Douglas. And it's alternating chapters. It includes like love letters that they wrote to each other. And it's about their backgrounds and then how they met, like how they fell in love. And it's kind of a complicated story of how they fell in love and got married, and then their marriage over the years. So there's a little film history, there's a little biography, and then it's just a really sweet story about their love for each other. And Michael Douglas, Kirk Douglas' son, writes the foreword. It's a very touching foreword. And it has like a little insert of pictures. It's not a very long book. I think it's like it's about 200 pages. And it's a great summer read. It's, if you're intimidated by a really heavy biography, but you want a little sense of what it was like being a movie star in the 20th century, this is kind of an approachable way to kind of access that.
Oh, that's brilliant, because I tell you what, I've pretty much steered clear of like autobiographies from classic movie stars. I just kind of assumed they'd be like you said, with the Cagney one and so on. So yeah, I really like that. I'll check that out, definitely. Right, I've got one more. It's kind of a cheat, but it fits in quite nicely with something you said earlier, actually. Because I'm going to recommend not just a book, but a series of books. And they're about particular films. So it's called the BFI Film Classics Series, BFI being British Film Institute. Now, I'm not sure how like readily available these books are in the US. Have you heard of these before?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, they're really good. They're like very small, short books. They're typically about 100 pages. They each focus on a particular film. Different writers each time. So, you can get ones that come at films from very different perspectives. Sometimes they're quite straightforward about the making of, with a bit of analysis. And then occasionally you get one where it's somebody examining a film from like a feminist perspective or a psychoanalytical perspective or whatever it might be. But the overall standard's very high. I think the great thing is, because they're so short, you can read them and kind of process them very quickly, but they're usually kind of packed with detail. The series covers all sorts of stuff. It's not just American films, but lots of like Hollywood classics are included, so you can get books on BFI books on Citizen Kane and Singing in the Rain and Vertigo and on and on and on. And I think they're still coming out quite regularly too. I think it's like a couple a month or something like that. Maybe that's slightly wrong. I'm not sure. But anyway, the series I would highly recommend. So yeah, if you get the chance, I'd say dive into this series,
I do a series on my blog called New Books Roundup, where I collect all the classic movie books that are coming out in the next few months. I'm working on one right now. And I find those BFI books all the time, like at least a few a year. And I list them, but I've never tried them. But they look really interesting, especially I want to pick out a couple of films I'm particularly interested in, just give them a shot.
Yeah, because the series has been going now for like something like 20 years or something. So they've got quite an impressive like back catalogue now. So yeah, definitely. I mean, what have you got coming up on the site, Raquel? I mean, how many, can you tell us about the books you're going to be reviewing in the near future?
Yeah, I have. Oh, I always have too many books that I want to read. Right now, well, I have that book about the film Giant from 1956 that I'm going to read. The next book I'm reading is Mel Brooks' FAQ, which is basically a look at all of his movies and kind of breaks them down with lots of interesting information. I got a book recently called Sterling Hayden's Wars. Sterling Hayden was kind of really great actor, but also kind of controversial, especially when you look into like the House of Un-American Committees and like the Blacklist and stuff like that, because he named names. So I'm curious to see what that's about. And also like when he retired, like his life kind of went totally different direction. So I'm curious about that one.
All right. Well, I think we should probably start to wrap up there, but that was a lot of fun. I thought I really enjoyed that. So thanks again for coming onto the podcast today.
Thank you.
If people want to find you on social media, I mean, I know you're fairly active on Twitter and so on. I mean, where's the best place for people to track you down?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Raquel Stetcher, my name. So that's pretty easy. I have a new Instagram, just specifically movie related, called Kel Movies. Yeah, it's Q-U-E-L-L-E Movies. And I have a new blog called kelmovies.com, which is about new movies. So now I have an old movie blog and a new movie blog. And my Out of the Past blog has a Facebook page too.
In terms of the podcast, I mean, you can find us, of course, on Twitter at Movie Palace Pod. We're on Facebook as well. If you type in Movie Palace, you should find our page, or you can go to facebook.com/Movie Palace Pod. I hope you can join us, then, listeners, next week when the curtain rises once more at the Movie Palace.